right. In the spirit of Black History Month, we want to thank you. Good evening, and thank you all for being with us as we continue our New York State effort, Equity, Diversity, Inclusiveness Educational Series. I would like to introduce our Honorable Executive Director of New York State AFERD, Ms. Colleen Corsi, to say a few words of welcoming. Colleen?
Hi, everyone. Just want to say that I'm excited that we're all here together, excited to hear the words of wisdom from our dear friend, Mr. Paul Forbes, and just super excited that we're all here.
Well said, well said. We're also excited to include this session as part of our, drum roll please, New York State AFERD podcast channel entitled A through Z Health and PE. Exciting. Therefore, welcome to episode 3 of the podcast entitled Implicit Bias When Good Intentions Are Not Good Enough. Our moderators for this evening is yours truly, Dr. Clancy Seymour. I'm an assistant professor and director of health, physical education, and sport pedagogy in the Department of Kinesiology at Canisius College. I also have the privilege to serve as the current president of New York State AFERD. Our second moderator is the one and only Dr. Victor Ramsey. Dr. Ramsey is an educational administrator and a member of the implementation team with the New York City Department of Education Office of School Wellness Programs. He is also an adjunct assistant professor at York College in the School of Health Sciences and Professional Programs in the Department of Health and Human Performance. Dr. Ramsey is the immediate past president of New York State AFERD's Equity, Diversity, and Inclusiveness section.
We are also honored to introduce Dr. Sherry Treadwell, who is our New York State AFERD EDI section president. Ms. Sherry, say a few words.
Sure, thank you, Victor. I really appreciate having the opportunity to be here. I especially want to thank Clancy and Colleen and Vic for continuing this conversation and continuing the series on implicit bias and really so helping everyone grow as better human beings and helping us to become the best version of ourselves. So I want to thank you for continuing this conversation.
Thank you so much. Nice indeed. Before we begin, please note that this session is being recorded. Please remember to keep yourself muted. We invite you to keep your camera on, but do remember if it's on, everyone can see you. Please check to see if the name and your profile picture is your full name. If not, please change it. I had to change mine. I had a mistake, so I changed mine. Toward the end of the session, we will be posting links in the chat box for a certificate of attendance and a link for those of you who need CTLE hours. If the time permits, our guest speaker will answer questions and or comments. Additionally, his contact information will be made available for further discussion should you need some.
Thanks, Vic. This evening's session is titled Implicit Bias When Good Intentions Are Not Good Enough. And we are excited to have Mr. Paul Forbes join us again this evening. Brother Paul originally presented during our EDI town hall in September and is now our returning champion, despite his allegiance to the New York Islanders and New York Mets.
Mr. Forbes is a native New Yorker who was born, raised, and still lives in Brooklyn, my hometown as well. Mr. Forbes has dedicated his professional life to working with students and family from historically underrepresented neighborhoods and communities. In his current role as Executive Director for Educational Equity, Anti-Bias, and Diversity, Paul provides oversight and support for the effective implementation and continuous development of the Implicit Bias Community Responsive Education Initiative. He also helps develop a strategic vision to guide implementation of trainings and professional development to schools, also after school providers, district and borough support offices on equity, topics within education that includes implicit bias, culturally responsive education, and discussions around systemic and structural racism. Brother Paul will begin our session this evening with a 10 to 15 minute contextual introduction and exercise. Without any further ado, again, it gives me a great honor to introduce the front office man of the Mets, officially, Mr. Mets, Brother Paul Ford.
So good afternoon, everyone. I'm Brother Victor, Brother Clancy, appreciate you. Dr. Treadwell, good to be here. Sister Corsi, thank you for having me back. And there's a few people that I've met from the last time we did a town hall that I see again. And so good seeing you. Some folks I work in the DOE with that is here. I was in the session last night and seeing Amy and a couple other people. So thank you. again, my name is Paul Forbes. I am in the Twitterverse once in a while. So the best way to get me is on Twitter. Direct message, just DM, and you can get me there, and or once in a while I tweet, so you might be able to comment or respond too. I see Laura smiling because she knows that I can fill up a timeline from time to time. so we have a relatively short period of time, and so when Victor reached out to me about this, I was like, oh, let me do a presentation. How do I present on implicit bias in a relatively short period of time without selling short or shortchanging you on this concept? I usually, when we would do in person, I was doing a 5-hour in-person implicit bias awareness workshop. My office went remote and developed a platform where we have 4 modules that you do, 3 are self-paced. But I've also now developed a 8-hour, 4-part series that I'm doing with a few districts and schools across the country. And it's been exciting because I love this work. And so I wanted to make sure as we have a conversation that I gave some contextual background as was just mentioned. And so I want to start with this. I'm going to read something. I'm going to ask you to read along as well. Don't read out loud, but read along and or listen. And I'm going to take maybe 2 or 3 people, just what resonates, what's coming up for you based on what you've heard and you've seen. 2 women are standing on the bank of a swift river. The current carries a man desperately struggling to stay afloat towards them. Both women jump into the water and pull the man to safety. While the brave rescuers tend to the victim, the current carries a second man towards them, also desperate and screaming for help. Again, the women jump into the river to the rescue. As they pull out the second victim, they spot a third man flailing away. One woman quickly jumps into the water to save the latest victim. She turns to see the other woman jogging upstream. "Why aren't you helping?" she cries. "I am," replies the other woman. "I'm gonna see who's pushing them in." Okay, so time is of the essence. So I'm just gonna ask folks, maybe like again, 2-3 people be able to come off mute. What you heard, what you saw, what you're seeing, what resonated from what you just heard? Briefly, quickly, what's coming up for you? Anybody? And just say your name when you speak so I just know who's speaking.
So what comes up for me is it instead of doing such a quick fix to really figure out what the root of the problem is.
Okay, and name, just to make sure everyone, I know.
Oh, you, Laura, sorry. Yeah.
Don't need no name because you just, you know, you're so famous. Everyone knows you, but just in case. Okay. Getting to the root of the problem. Thank you, Laura. Anybody else? What came for you? What resonates?
Hi, this is Kathleen Canosa. It seems like some of them are being reactive and others are being proactive, trying to figure out what is the root of the problem instead of what is the problem.
Thank you. Appreciate that. So again, reaction, intervention versus prevention. Okay. One more person. What resonates? What's coming up for you?
Hello, John Strong. How you doing?
Good, John.
I just wanted to mention that I think it's worthwhile that were identifying the fact that these ladies are putting themselves in harm's way in order to fish these men out of the water, and that's worth mentioning.
So usually, I've done this with literally over a couple thousand people. I've done presentations and I've shared this, and usually someone says the role reversals, right? Normally when you hear things like flailing away or desperate and screaming, it's usually a female woman, and then someone who's rescuing is usually a man. This is a role flip, and it seems like the men keep screwing up, so the women have to come and continue to save. Okay, so I appreciate.
I think we usually screw up. Sorry, Paul.
No. I didn't want to go down that rabbit hole, but usually that's probably accurate. We could say amen, pass the collection plate, and we could end the session here. So I appreciate the comments. And again, if we have more time, we'll just listen for other folks and other things would come up. When I share this, with everything that's been said, yes, and. So it's only been a handful of people who notice what I'm going to talk about right here, who have heard or seen this. At the end, you read or you hear, she turns to see the other woman jogging upstream. "Why aren't you helping?" she cries. "I am," replies the other woman. "I'm going to see who's pushed them in." Folks, there's nowhere in this paragraph where we're told that anybody was pushing anybody in. And I make this point because we need to think about what we think about, what we say, what we don't say, what we do, and what we don't do. A few people, Victor knows me, have seen me and met me. You'll know that I'm a big guy, right? I'm a black guy, good looking, 6'5", 320. I don't know why people are laughing. I'm really 6'5". I don't know. Oh, maybe good looking. Good looking, 6'5", 330 pounds, big guy. Okay. If I was going upstream to find out who's pushing them in, I'm going to go up there with something to neutralize because you got to be pretty big and strong to be pushing men in, right? So I might go up there with a gun, a knife for my West Indian brethren, a cutlass. I might go up there, and if I were to see a man with a hammer, I might neutralize that person. But then I'll come to find out that he was actually putting a nail into some planks on the bridge that was faulty, that was causing people to fall in. Folks, we are dealing with issues. We all the times go to come to the table and come and meet around people and say, what's the solution? How do we solve this problem? Implicit bias is real. If you're a thinking, breathing human being, if you identify as a thinking, breathing human being, you have implicit bias. I also make assumption that not everyone in here identifies as a thinking, breathing human being, but you also identify as a good person with good intentions. There's also an assumption I'm going to make about the folks that are in the space right now. And with that, you have implicit bias. If we're not careful, we will go upstream and try to find the root cause, but go with our preconceived notions. Think of how different it would be if she would have said, "I'm going upstream to see what's going on." That's a whole different mindset. It's a different approach. You're going with open-mindedness and say, "Let me see." But no, she already decided, "I have the solution or the issue or the problem before I even go." And she's well-intentioned. She's trying to get to the root cause, as Laura and a couple of you already had said. But I say to you, let's think about what we say, what preconceived notions, and how often I can manifest with the young people we work with, the assumptions we make, with the communities we work in, the assumptions we go in, and how it affects our behavior. I've worked with schools, again, and I can speak, you know, Victor can tell you the work that we've done with so many schools here in New York City. And I've literally gone into schools where I've had people say to me, "Paul, I love your passion. I love what you're talking about. But look, do me a favor." I'm sitting here in front of a window with 17 inches of snow ahead of me. But they'll look at me and saying, "Look, do you see where we work? Do you really think we could solve these issues? It's poverty, Paul. Look, mom's in jail. Dad, he's on drugs. If they would only pull their pants up, we could fix the problem." And I say to folks, if we truly want to move the needle, if we truly want to change the narrative, we need to darken that window and make it a mirror. And for some of us, we need a full-length mirror to see how we show up individually. What do we bring to the table every day? This isn't going to change. But if you're easy, it's easy when you say, oh, it's the superintendent, it's the principal, it's my partner, it's my girlfriend, it's my brother, it's my cousin, it's this, it's my team. It's easy to point the finger, but when we have to sit down and be reflective and introspective, it might bother us with what we see in that mirror. And some of us are afraid because we have this binary idea of good, bad, and say, are you calling me a racist or a bigot or a homophobe or misogynist? No, your patterns will tell me that. Your patterns will show me, but I'm going to start from a place that you have implicit bias. And we're all being affected. We drink the same water. We're all drinking the same water, and we're all breathing the same air. But we got to have these conversations as a foundational piece as we get to the work. So just quickly, just again, so I'm saying implicit bias. I want to make sure people have the definition. I'm going to show a clip, and then we're going to get into the conversation. Implicit bias. We all have preferences. You might say, I prefer a tall person, short person, white, black, lives in the suburbs, living in the urban cities, this. Everyone has preferences, but implicit bias is about the attitude of stereotypes that affect our understanding, actions, and decisions in an unconscious manner. They can be favorable or unfavorable. Implicit associations we harbor in our subconscious cause us to have feelings and attitudes about other people based on characteristics such as race, ethnicity, age, and appearance. And so again, I want to make sure that I'm not using terminology if you don't have an understanding. This is not your preference of, if I said to you, do you prefer Michael Jackson or Prince? Each one of you very quickly could say, oh, Michael Jackson. You might say Prince. You might say, oh, I like the performance here. I like the music, all kind of things of why you prefer one to other. That's bias. We're talking about implicit bias where people have egalitarian values, no child left behind. And so we hold that here, but if we turn around and we could be the principal of the school that suspends the most black and brown boys in the city. How do you reconcile your egalitarian value that you hold here with your actions or inactions? And that's why implicit bias is foundational for me, why I think it's a missing link for the work that we need to do, especially for so many people who are now woke and talk about equity and access. We shouldn't be talking about that without doing the introspective and reflective work. Before we go into begin the conversation with my brethren here, I want to show a clip of why, again, this is so important. For those who may not have seen, this is Nia Dennis from UCLA. If you haven't seen it, enjoy. If you've seen it before, enjoy again. But I want you to be critically conscious as you watch this, and I'll point to why this is important, how relevant to implicit bias. 2 minutes. Now, I tell people that from when I saw this, last week or last weekend, I could produce a 2-hour presentation just out of this. This is such a rich 2-minute clip in here of what we could unpack and understand in here. And it's relevant to the work that we are doing. It's relevant PEHE community as we think about what does that look like and how do we have a racial and an equity lens and justice, a social justice lens in the work that we're doing? How do we bring the lived experiences of our young people and families into our classrooms and school communities? Listen, you don't have to know how to do the Dougie. You don't have to know Superman. You may not know who Soulja Boy is. Missy Elliott is in there. You may not have noticed Kaepernick when she kneels, or Tommy Smith, 1968, Olympics in Mexico with the fist raise. You may not know all the symbolism of everything that's in there, but there's a message about, again, the willingness of saying, teach me. How do I learn more about the culture responsive aspect of what this young lady has just done in a profession, in a sport, in activity that traditionally there's people who look and say, that's nice, but that's not how we do it. That's not how it's done. How do we look at it and say, folks, what kind of preconceived notions do we have about gymnastics and what a routine looks like? How do we incorporate in a culture-responsive and sustaining manner this work from a social justice lens? And so I show that there. I'll show you that this is the tweet I put out after I saw this. I said, I don't know what score Dennis received for this, but it's not high enough. And I'm sure some of the judges and the folks watching have no idea what they just witnessed. Black excellence. Culture responsive, black girl magic, brilliance, kudos. And if we had more time, you'll see some of the response I got from someone and how I engaged in that conversation. But I just say that as we're doing this work, there are ways in which we can bring in the lived experiences. There are ways in which we could tap into social justice. We can talk about the being culture responsive. But it begins to mean, begin to understand the implicit biases that we have that we bring to the table every day that we need to unpack. So I'm going to stop there. There's my information. I have my DOE email address and my personal. I do that because while the introduction that was given was relevant up to a week ago, just for folks to know, I recently walked away from New York City Department of Education and walking away, not retiring, walking away because of the conversation we're having here and to stand on principle to say, we can't talk the talk without walking the walk. And that's important to me. And I think about what will you allow on your watch and what will you be complicit with and allow. And so I think my DOE account will be available till whenever, until they figure out in 2029 that I'm gone. So you can still email me, but you could also reach me, like I said, on Twitter first, but also I'm sharing in this. We are family, I think, I've heard. So that's my personal email as well. I'm going to now, so thank you. I'm going to stop sharing and I'm going to turn it back to, again, Clancy, Victor, and we'll go from there. Thank you, folks.
Brother Paul, this was fantastic, man. Fantastic. Thanks for getting us wet and ready, man. I really appreciate that. The Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey said, people without knowledge of their past history is a tree without roots. So I appreciate you bringing that to the forefront, because myself included I would have never looked at it through the lenses and through the manner in which you just shared. So thank you very much for that. I would like to now begin a few questions from our members related to your presentation this evening. And also from last September, I think we had some loose ends and we wanted to get to some of the deeper on that. So I'd like to start by asking you, when I first contacted you for potential second presentation, the title of the session you proposed was Implicit Bias When Good Intentions Are Not Good Enough. How did you arrive at that topic? What made you get to that topic? What was the crux of your motivation for that, sir?
Yeah, so I appreciate the question. So it's built into what I was saying in the run-up to this, right? This idea is that oftentimes people say, well, what do you mean, Paul? That wasn't my intentions. And many of us have heard that, right? When things happen, that wasn't my intention. I didn't plan to do that. That wasn't what I was thinking. Okay. But I tell folks, let's talk about intentions versus impact, I could say, okay, you didn't, that was the intention. I appreciate that. Now, can I talk to you about the way it landed and the impact it's had? If we can't have that conversation, then we're not in a good place, because constantly is going to be about you. If harm has been done, and we can all talk about how many times we've seen the apologies when things happen. I apologize if that caused harm, if that may have caused harm to anybody else. You know it's caused harm, which is why you're standing in front of all these people reading a thing that someone prepared to say, if it did. If we're honest, we'll say, thank you. I didn't know that. I had my blinders on, which I didn't know, but you have helped me. When you know better, you do better. And so my thing is to really get folks thinking about the intentions versus the impact, and separating from being a good or bad person to being a person who has implicit biases that's manifested or began from 6 months old to wherever we are now. And that's okay. What's not okay is not being willing to engage and explore what that means and unpack.
That's awesome. I have to could thank you enough for that, because being a proud member of New York State AFER, I can say, you know, taking this on first, you know, taking it on bravely, not holding back, you know, and having this conversation is something that we're supposed to do, and we're intending to do, and we are doing. So bringing you on board and sharing those words of wisdom is very much appreciated. Thank you for that.
Appreciate you. Clancy, you're on mute. So I know you're saying some wise things, but it just is going to resonate when I hear you.
Indeed, well said. Let's continue, Brother Paul. During our previous EDI town hall in September, you discussed a story that resonated with many, and particularly myself. It was about your time as an administrator at a school where you were uneasy about an equestrian experience in a PE program, citing cultural relevance, only later to reflect and question your own self.
Yeah.
How could health and physical educators alongside athletic administrators balance being culturally responsive with potential bias as well?
Yeah. So, you know, I thanks for bringing that up again. I think about that often, of going into, and I keep talking about Victor, because he would see me leave the office and head out to different schools, and we had funding for sports activities, after school programs, and I would make sure that schools were implementing. And I would say, tell me more about what you plan to do. And I remember going to the South Bronx and having a principal tell me that she wanted to have, I'm expecting to check off basketball and football and soccer maybe. And she said, I want to have a fencing team and an equestrian team. And I remember just saying, okay, denied. No, I'm not going to fund that. I said, it's in the South Bronx. Where are you going to find a horse? And why would you want to give weapons, more weapons, to students? Who, I mean, this is me 12 years ago, 15 years ago, maybe. No, a little bit more, probably, you know, 20. I want to push myself as far back to say I should know better. But the point is, I was still an equity person and thinking this is going to fix the issues. And here I was saying no. And I had to go back the next day and apologize and confess and just say what was going on inside of me. I didn't even know about implicit bias. But what I did know is that as a Black man in New York City, signing up to do this work in urban education reform to close these gaps, I saw that I was deepening the gaps, even with best intentions, right? And so this is important as I think about all the fields, right? People have said to me, oh, I'm just, as I've heard before, oh, I'm just a gym teacher. Oh, I'm just a paraprofessional. Oh, I'm just this. I'm like, no, you're not. You are and can be, if you choose to be, a change agent within your sphere of influence, right? So it's, again, if the idea is just roll out basketballs or give basketballs, and again, traditionally for years, that was the thing about, oh, we make the joke about the PE teacher could read the newspaper and throw the basketballs out there. But if the assumption is, because they're Black and brown, they're going to play basketball or they're going to jump rope and do this, you're like, wait a minute. And whether you're Black or white, whether you're Asian, Latina, whatever you are, you can bring those, again, lived experiences and your own biases in, and it then manifest. And we can begin to put our young people into certain buckets and get, like, assume they will be the basketball. They're the athletes. They're the jocks. They're the certain people that we give privilege to. for things they could allow to do as a student athlete. Like, we say that, but it's also, it's the athlete part first. And, oh, I have been recognized because I discovered the LeBron James, or I've done this. So there's all of that is in there. And it's how we begin to unpack that based on, again, the history in this country. If people remember Jimmy the Greek, who made comments about, he eventually, in New York Daily News, he eventually was fired because he made things about, oh, Black men have been bred like horses to be athletes. And there's certain things that, again, we can have because of King Kong, because of things that we've heard, because of ideas, he's a monster on the court. There's things that we can say and do that actually we don't realize those words matter. And so that experience to me is one that I say it with transparency and vulnerability to say each one of us need to have that reflective and introspective time of when we might have caused harm, not intentionally, but then what do we do once we found out? Do we become defensive and say, no, that's not me. I'm a good person. I'm giving away millions of dollars. Or do we say, thank you, and confess, and say, I was wrong, and here's where I was wrong. That's important for this work if we want to go to equity lens and social justice lens.
Thank you. Yeah, that's thank interesting. You. Remember my early years as a phys ed teacher in Crown Heights when I told folks I introduced floor hockey to the BIPOC population over there, they thought I was nuts. They said, hockey? I mean, all they thought kids played was basketball. So thank you for that piece there.
If I can say real fast, Victor, when I went to, I was in public school, went to private school, downtown Brooklyn, Packer Collegiate Institute. It was interesting that one of my favorite things to do, I only played my varsity year, senior year, I played basketball. I loved floor hockey. And I used to say, I'm going to be the Grant Fuhr. I'm going to be the first Black Olympic goalie. Like, I knew who Grant Fuhr was. I follow hockey. People were like, what are you doing? I played floor hockey. I couldn't skate. I know it doesn't matter. I was like, I'm going to be the first Black Olympic goalie for the U.S. Team. And that was in my head. Like, I was like, I'm big enough. I basically covered the whole goal, so you can't score on me. So my thing is like, right? I covered it with that. But I agree, and I appreciate you saying that, because floor hockey for me, I was, I said, like, oh, only a Packer you do that, because it's a private school with seven Black kids, but that wouldn't happen if I was a Clara Barton or at Prospect Heights. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, thank you for engaging us tonight. I know that, Clancy, you had that question answered because you and I were talking about that topic you shared and how that changed your way of seeing. And again, this is about growth, folks. This is about us, you know, being brave enough to grow and admit when we don't know something. And that's how we learn and we grow. So I appreciate you bringing up that question. I want to continue this because some of the questions we intertwined from our members. So thinking introspectively and reflecting on instructional practices, what advice would you offer to newly minted PE teachers and administrators regarding their role and approach to matters pertaining to EDI? For example, how do professionals approach implicit bias when looking for a new school community for the purpose of employment, for example? Yes. Do you believe this thought applies to seasoned or veteran pedagogues and administrators alike?
Yeah, like, oh, how much time do we have? So the research tells us that people have said, oh, with the more learning you get, does that reduce implicit bias? Actually, the research tells us that the more, when people say, I went to Yale, and I got this, and how can I do to know? Actually, the more you know is actually deeper and more entrenched your implicit biases can lie, because now you believe you have the truth, or you know, and you say, well, I went to, like a thing, think about how many people hire based, you went to, and again, no shade for anyone, you went to Michigan, you went to UPenn, you went here, you went to USC. Like, we have a thing even of how we select which schools. So if you came out of this school, you have to be. And I'm like, well, I have some students in the CUNY system here in New York City that I'm like, there's some brilliance in there. And we might, because of the biases, what good can come out of, we can overlook. Right, we might have overlooked the neodenesis of the world. We might overlook, like, people are all celebrating Amanda Gorman, who read the poem at the inauguration. There are Amanda Gorman sitting in our classrooms right now. But again, if you think you have the know, you're in the know. I know what's best. I know what's a level four. That level two student with the speech impediment is Amanda Gorman, who speaks about the issues that she had, the challenges that she had, that she just, and almost recently couldn't pronounce R's. And she stood in front of millions and read The Hill We Climb. And so I think about that and saying, I know this space again is for PEHE pedagogue and stuff, and I get it. I try to keep it in general and say, if you're a human being, if you breathe and think, folks, we should be thinking about this and we should be introspective and reflective, and more so in the pandemic that we're in. Like, I'm just troubled by how many people are saying, let's get back to normal. Stop that. Back to normal wasn't that good. Why do we want to go back? We should create the new normal. And so I'm asking whether you're 25 years in or you're 25 days in. Folks, take some time to say, you know what? Here in New York City, we're going to have a, you know, midwinter recess break and have, you know, people have been in front of screens, and we've been, take some time and just sit back and say, let me unpack some of the beliefs that I carry. Why do I carry it? Where did it come from? It could be, I grew up in a church. My father was a pastor. So I get it. And there's things that I've had to unlearn, that I've had to really assess when I'm hanging out, if I'm hanging out with my buddies, when we could have hang out safely, but if I'm hanging out with my buddies and my buddy said, oh man, Paul, listen, last night I had a date. It was amazing. Had so much fun. I can't wait until the next one. I might turn to him and be like, yo, what does she look like? And he might turn and say, well, he's 6'1". He works out all the time. He has a mustache. And I'm sitting there going, whoa, this is my buddy. And I could be causing harm because the ideas I have of what a date looks like, what a relationship looks like. I also know what I might grow up in the church learning about, and ideas and culturally. And I'm saying, let's unpack that. I'm not saying to be a nihilist and forget everything you've been taught, but I'm saying take that time to be reflective and introspective, and you will find, I'm not asking, you will find things you say, oh, wow, I didn't even thought about that. And Paul, when you mentioned that, Nia Dennis, Victor just said, he saw it from that athlete. He's like, I didn't even think about that aspect. Clancy, you said you heard that story the last time. You were like, oh, that moved me. It made me think. That's good. We need to engage and find more that we have in common versus what we have a difference in. And, you know, this society we're in right now, it's sad because everyone's go to their corners. You believe that over there? And I'm saying, no, let's come together and let's have the discourse. We could disagree and not be disagreeable.
Impressive, Brother Paul. You know, Vic mentioned that it's a journey and learning, right? And I love the reference to being introspective and reflective, but I think with all due respect, I could add one more, and that's reflexive too. What are you going to do,
amen,
as a result of what you're learning from your reflection and your introspection too, right?
I'm not going to give you credit for that, but I'm going to add that to my thing. But when you hear me say, you'll be like, yo, Paul stole that from me. So thank you, Clancy. I'll take that. We appreciate
it. Family, my friend. No problem.
Until the bills are due.
So another question. How does one deal with the intention of trying to diversify the workplace and dealing with the shortcomings of these actions from a school administration standpoint? And from a broader context, how do you think the political landscape shapes beliefs around EDI for education?
Wow. So we're in tough times, folks. I mean, these are just tough times. We have, and I say we have been in a space here. There were people, I think, that might have let down their guards after President Obama. I don't care what your political affiliation is what I'm talking about here. We're talking about just decency and humanity. You may not have agreed with everything that President Obama and his administration did, but we pivoted to something very quickly. People thought it was economic anxiety and this, that. It's very clear that this country has been founded on the genocide of one group of folks and the enslavement of another group of folks, and we have not had our truth and reconciliation. I won't stop saying that because we see the manifestation every couple of hours, months, days, years. It just keeps coming up, and because we haven't taken our time to sit with. So the political piece of it, when I heard, you know, some people reached out to me when they said, oh my gosh, the previous person who occupied that White House said to get rid of all diversity in trainings in feds so you can't do your work. First of all, it's like, I don't know who you're talking about and who you're talking to, because I'm I'm going to do what I've been called to do, right? So that's not going to stop me because someone is saying we can do. And it is federal, so it doesn't affect me anyway. But that's a commitment that we have to have to the work. Administrators, this idea of saying, I need to be vulnerable. If you sat through one of my, again, I have an 8-hour or 4-part series I do currently now, I spend this time, and you heard it here, I'm vulnerable. I'm going to share to you how that shows up for me. Paul Forbes, again, equity warrior, Black guy, that doesn't absolve me, right? And so the place and the ability to take that in and say, I'm coming to you, my staff, without all the answers. I'm looking to you to be a thought partner. I'm calling you in and not calling you out. Those are important principles that we need to have. And in there, you will see where, again, your own biases can lie. Of who do you call in? How do you have equity of voices? When people say, oh, I'm forming a team, and I say, who's on your team? And then we realize that we don't have any paraprofessionals or any school aides. You say, well, these are the same people you reach out to when your student is most disruptive. You send them out and say, go hang out with Paul. He takes you around. Usually that person is from the community. And you say, wait a minute, they best know some of our students, but we don't include them in the equity roundtable when we're talking about an equity team to make sure we're doing what's right by our students. So there are things that, again, we can sit down and truly begin to unpack. But first, this is us, each one of us saying, I'm willing to be open and vulnerable and transparent that I could do that mirror work. And I'm going to be able to come to staff meetings and to the community and say, this is what I'm doing. And I'm asking you to do the same. It won't be perfect. It'll be hard. Vaccines right now, we know disproportionately, while we know who's being affected the most, we know disproportionately who's not getting and who is getting, right? We know, and not just being a jingoist and saying we're going to stay here, nationalist America, but go around the world. America and Canada and a couple of our European countries, they represent less than 5% of the world population, but they have almost 60% of the vaccines right now. So what about the country that, so being able to bring it up and speak about it and say, what am I thinking when I say, I need to get this, I need to get to the front line, all these things. I understand the fears, but we got to have these conversations and say, what in my mind, what beliefs do I have that it is America first? Even though I didn't believe that last administration, that we should have this first and we should do this and what we represent. Until we start changing that mindset, we're going to continue to perpetuate inequitable outcomes and sit down and wonder why. What hasn't changed? What hasn't changed is the work that's going on here and in here.
Thank you, Paul. Karamawi Haile Selassie once said that education is a quest from the cradle to the grave. So we never stop learning, my friend. And I appreciate you sharing that with us. As we wind down, I would love for you to share with us your response to a question from one of our members. And then in the same vein, because we wind down to our time, just tell us your next steps. But the question is, how do we continue to foster better practices of equity and inclusivity? And after you answer that, you could just tell us on your next journey as you continue to do your work with EDI.
Could you repeat that again? Force the work?
How do we continue to foster better practices of equity and inclusivity?
Yeah. So I'm going to keep beating this drum about, I've really beginning to think about whether this is a sequential thing. At one point, people said to me, Paul, we could do the CRE and the diversity work simultaneously. Maybe I have my bias because this is the work that I love and I'm called to do at this moment in time. But I feel like this is the missing link. I truly believe that. I believe that if we can do and understand what oftentimes we haven't been taught about, which is the neuroscience, positive youth development, those topics and understand how that works. You don't have to be a neuroscientist, but you need to understand the way in which we make connections, the way in which we form ideas, a basic idea of cortisol versus oxytocin, and knowing that if we do certain things, the fight or flight's going to kick in, that, you know, especially in the middle school years, what that means or how embarrassed or I just ask a question in front of all the other students. Like, if we start understanding that, understanding how associations, affinity bias, confirmation bias, if we start understanding these ideas, it's going to help us as we begin to understand why it's so important for diversity, equity, inclusion. These are grounding principles for why we do the work. If you don't understand, if you're a chef or a cook, you know, you might have heard this analogy before. I could tell you about something. You could see something you want to cook, and you come to your kitchen, you go to the store, you buy all the ingredients, the recipe's there, the ingredients are all there. By putting it on the countertop doesn't get your meal cooked. There's things that you need to do. There's steps you got to take. So we talk about, you know, we want to have safe spaces, yes, and brave spaces. So the brave space is the action part of it. Are we able to now take what we heard in a safe space? Okay, we're here, but now what am I going to do? How am I going to step out? What am I going to do by faith? And so that leads me into, you know, what's my next steps? Again, I don't see this. And part of the reason why I was able to walk away, but people have said to me, Paul, you walk away with six-figure position, years in here, during a pandemic. Yeah, because there's still something about principles, and there's something about what we're teaching. We could do Martin Luther King all we want to, right? We could talk about this. It's always right to do right, and all these words that we say, how we live in the words that we speak. And so I'm saying no. I am. And you know what? There are young people, again, going back to Victor, you know, we had young people watching us and seeing us as people. We were the young people, right? And now we are more veterans. I'm still not retirement age. Victor is, I'm not. But, you know, we have seen what that means. And how do we pass the baton? What are we teaching, especially now in this time? What message are we teaching? What are we saying? There might be someone who's on my team. When they get to a position that they're executive director, they might look back and say, you know what? Paul took a stand. He just said, no, we're not doing this. And he was vulnerable and he was open and he shared. So I'm not doing it. I'm not trying to be a martyr, but there's so much work out there. Let me tell you, all over this country, people just like, I don't want to answer some of my emails and stuff because I wouldn't want to say no, but there's work out there, folks. People want to know and they need to know. And that's why each one of us need in. We need to do that work behind the work. If we don't do that, I don't want to hear you talk about equity, diversity, and all this. That's lip service. I want to see life service for our kids, our communities, and for our future. Let's form that beloved community. Let's create a new normal. Let's create a better tomorrow.
Man, Paul, you remind me of Malcolm X when he said, if you don't stand for something, you'll fall for anything.
Amen.
And I appreciate that quote. I really appreciate that.
Amen.
Yes. Clancy?
Definitely agreed. What do you think, Brother Ramsey? Do we have any time for one or two questions from the audience?
Colleen, on time? Yeah. Sure.
Well, I'm good. I don't let you know. I'm good on time, so you just let me know.
We can entertain at least two, and we'll try to keep it within a minute, so we'd be respectful of people's time. Just, you know.
I'm retired, so I can do it, you know.
Sure. We can entertain at least two questions. Does anyone in the audience have a question? Oh, Lauren is on. Go ahead, Lauren.
So my question is, I want to, and since the first time I met you, I have just been following you and creeping your Twitter page because, you know, you speak to me, and I want to know how to take your, I want to take your four-part series, your four-hour yep. series, whatever you got, I want.
Yes, ma'am. Yep. You had reached out to me before, so I apologize. I was still going through that whole thing and figuring out, but I will... Yes, we will be in communication.
Okay.
I can, again, speak to Victor and the team here. If they want to do something that was for this community, we could set up something and do. I am willing. This is the work. And so, Laura, yes, I appreciate that and the sentiments. I am committed. I do believe, like I said, I could walk away from what people say, your job. It's not about my job, it's the calling. And I truly believe that if we don't get this right, especially coming out of this pandemic, we're going to be in a very bad place. And we're going to look back and say, how did this happen?
Yes.
We know how it happened. And so I'm committed to it. So yes, Even if it's just you, I will do the, I mean, you have to go look under your couch for your, you know, all the dimes and nickels and stuff, because, you know, I'm expensive now, but.
That's all right. You're worth it.
Lauren, absolutely. Thank you for that question, Lauren. You serve as a you are like another tentacle. This organization is all about resources, sharing the resources and information, which is more powerful when we share it. So we thank you for that question. And certainly you can take that on also as well. So we thank you. Let's entertain one more question before we wrap up, please. Does someone ask a question?
Anyone else?
Anyone?
I could talk to him all day, so.
Okay.
Oh, boy.
I'll offer a question.
Go ahead, John.
Go ahead, John. Go ahead.
Is that okay?
Yeah, of course.
Oh, sorry. I'm just getting home, and it's my internet's kind of funky. Can you get me or no?
Yes, we can hear you, John. Go ahead.
Okay, great. So my question is this, Paul, I'm currently a chief diversity and equity officer at my institution, and I found in the past 10 years in doing this work that the past 10 years doing this work does not really prepare folks for this moment. Can you talk to the folks that might have some of that same experience?
You broke out there, yeah. John. So I guess I'm hearing some like this moment is a unique moment in time. We are like I say, folks, we are not going to understand. We're living through history right now, and we're going to look back and see the effects of the pandemic, this physical distancing that we've seen, children who are not able to know what it means to socialize in a way that we have learned and grown up, not being able to, you know, wearing a mask that you don't see facial expressions and stuff, and what that means for your own development. And then it's the financial, and then it's the fears, then it's the alcoholism, then it's the suicidal ideations, all the things that we're going to see that just converging in a country where, again, 50% believe this, 50%, I mean, it's just a lot. The preparation for this, I would argue, is the time and effort that we're putting into understanding what this is. So again, I saw something from George Floyd where a number of people said, oh, read Kendi's How to Be an Anti-Racist. Read this book on white fragility and this. And then I saw things play out where on January 6th, we saw something, an insurrection. And I'm like, where are all the people who said all this that was learned and they were now woke? How did I step up and say, wait a minute, if that was Muslim people, if that was Black Lives Matter, if those are the same people, we wouldn't be having this conversation the same manner. How come I wasn't hearing that after all your learning? How come the NBA, after you painted all this stuff on the court, the football league, this, and I'm like, wait a minute. All these companies that came out and said, we are now part of diversity and this, and I'm saying, no, that's because, again, we haven't talked about what's going on inside here. So that's part of it, again, what's going on. The other part is your willingness to hear and receive. So you could say, I'm going to hear about the lived experience. But if you just paint something on the side of the road and say, that's what we're doing, and then you move back, then you haven't done anything. You just left paint on the side of the road. Like, that's not helping. And so the willingness to really engage and surround yourself with the folks who are really committed to this and willing to have, it's going to be uncomfortable at times. We need to lean into our discomfort more now, more than ever, because people are speaking. After George Floyd, many people did step up and say, no, you need to hear us. Enough of this is saying, and I don't need to do all the work. And that's true. And as we go through the different, whether it's gender, sexuality, race, how we identify, I don't have to convince you anymore. If you've seen this and I still have to convince you and explain everything to you and speak, folks, come on. This is the time to step up and say, this is the commitment. And I am going to bring folks to the table, and I'm going to hear, I'm going to receive, I'm going to make mistakes, but we'll go from there. So I think this is the time of, with all the chaos, it's also the time for opportunities and a recommitment to truly doing this work, because our kids are watching, the community's watching, and what we do or we don't do is going to be revealed with the next generation, plain and simple.
I wholeheartedly agree, but as an adjoiner, wouldn't you also say that rather than segmenting the population over and over again, which we seem to do when we look for Black Lives Matter, and we seem to do when we look for Indigenous people's rights, and we seem to do when we look for a Me Too movement, and we seem mm-hmm. to do for Trans Lives Matter, we keep on segmenting the population when what seems obvious to me now and was less obvious to me 10 years ago yep. is that by segmenting the population, we play into that game. But in fact, if we could get our hands around this idea of just flat out in-grouping versus out-grouping, I think we'd be in a much stronger position.
Oh, I agree. I don't disagree with that. I think that, again, when you go through, I speak about affinity bias and what plays out from that, saying, yes, we do have affinity bias for the in-group. And that's okay, meaning I understand the logic and the neuroscience behind that. The question is, what do you do with the out-group? If I say I will only work with and hire folks who are Mets fans, I have Yankee fans. We have some work to do with them. But there's some Yankee fans that I'm like, could also be, and how do I bring in? I said calling in until rather than calling out. So there is a time and place for calling out and addressing. But how are we bringing that in? So I agree with you. There's something about the way in which, but I also know there's also something that people say, well, now I'm on this side now, and I'm not the person in power. We start saying, let's unity. We start hearing some things, and I'm like, wait a minute, hold on. Let's have the real conversation here, understand what we're doing, unpack that. It doesn't have to be an either or. It should be a both and. And so we have done it for too long in a space where you say we have segmented and we've separated, but I think there is, and it was important for that segmentation to occur so people could hear, believe, and see. Like I said, we have not had our truth and reconciliation, and we're going to continue living in these kind of silos because this country was founded on the siloing of, and we need to not tweak it, but break the system. Too long we're trying to tweak. I'm not saying no. The system is working exactly how it was designed to work. We need to break the system and create a new. So I agree with you, and I'm, you know, shoulder to shoulder with you, John, and figuring out what that would look like and how we could do that. So I appreciate that.
Man, you know, fantastic. Folks, that this 1 hour, the Janet Jackson once says, funny how time passes when you're having fun. It's funny how time passes when you're learning so much, you know, sure. And I thank you so much, Paul. I would like Clancy to go ahead. Thank you so much, sure. Paul. Thank you, John, for your questions. Go ahead. Yes.
Sister Dawson has some nice comments in the chat too, for certainly take a look at that. But, you know, Brother Paul, I was impressed last time, and I think everyone can speak to it. I think Laura Owen has certainly spoke about it, and I've mentioned it to John and Victor and many others, and Colleen as well, but you are passionate and obviously convicted about this. But the love in your heart is contagious, and that I nothing but kudos to you for that. That's really impressive. So, on behalf of New York State AFIRD, our EDI section, and all of our members, we thank Brother Paul for joining us this evening and sharing his vast knowledge and wisdom. Please visit us on NewYorkStateAFIRD.org, social media handles at New York State AFIRD, or call us at 315-823-1015 for more information. And please do not forget to register for upcoming virtual professional development on March 2nd, 4th, 9th, 11th, 16th, and 18th.
That's awesome. And as mentioned previously, this session will be posted on the New York State AFIRD website and our podcast channel. Dr. Seymour and I are excited to relaunch this podcast channel as an educational series. Stay tuned for upcoming new episodes. A lot more is here to come. And Paul, on behalf of all of us, thank you one again. And folks, thank you for engaging with us, and we appreciate your time and effort. Please be safe and share the love with all your students and all your friends and families.
Indeed.